Jemalangasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chachurmalitam Yena Tajmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swaparantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttaparakangam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sargajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitankam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vidamsha Hey Krishna Kavana Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataruvyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shrivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Tonight we shall discuss Krishna's appearance. Oh, welcome, Grant. I haven't seen you in so many years. Welcome back. Let's turn to page 224. Since it's the advanced night, we'll go right to the core of the problem. Who is this Krishna? What do you say, Joe? Who is this Krishna?
I speculate that perhaps he's the essence of life and everything. I mean, his essence.
And where did you get that notion from?
Not the Bhagavad Gita.
I'm certain of that, but we are.
Although, there are passages in here that I've read that sort of seem to support that.
No, nothing in here.
It says Krishna is in everything.
Yes.
Well, that's my personal interpretation.
That, once again?
That Krishna being in everything is, that's Krishna is the essence of.
What's the nature of this essence? That's my point.
Krishna.
Yeah. What's the nature of that essence? As you say.
I guess it can't be described, really.
Yeah. Why?
Because it's that incredible. That amazing. You can't say it's just that or just that.
But suppose Krishna describes himself.
I think he describes himself by being in his essence.
No, suppose, just like you're talking, suppose Krishna talks.
I don't know what he'd say.
That's why we have Bhagavad Gita. You get it?
Yeah.
Now, do you accept that Krishna can talk? The essence? Do you accept that the essence can talk?
Yeah. I think, yeah.
All right, so? The problem is that whenever people say the essence of everything, they generally mean impersonal. Because they cannot conceive of how a person can be all-pervading and still be, and still have individuality at the same time. They cannot conceive that.
I think the individuality lies in the nature of the essence. I mean, I agree. I don't think it's an impersonal essence. It has the personality of being what it is, which is Krishna.
Where do you get all this stuff from?
That's what goes on with my crazy little head.
I see. Yeah, fortunately, you're beginning to study Bhagavad Gita. I recommend you start at page one and go to the end, you know? Clayton, what do you know about Krishna?
He's the cause of all causes.
What makes you think so?
I read it. and it makes sense. If he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's the source, then everything must emanate from him. Mm. So he would be the cause of all causes.
Now, how are you going to get some actual experience of that?
Bhakti.
Can you directly perceive Krishna?
I don't know. I may have misinterpreted what I've read, but it seems that if I reach a point in bhakti where I'm doing so well, he'll want to come and see me, and he'll come down and
come down.
Oh, sorry. He'll personally make a visit.
In the seventh chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, I am the taste of water, I am the light of the sun and the moon, I am the ability in man. So, that's a preliminary way you can directly experience Krishna. Krishna says, I am this, I am that. So when you drink water, you think Krishna is the taste of water, you're directly perceiving Krishna.
The taste of the water comes out like richer as well.
You tried it?
Yeah.
Okay, so go on like that and you'll gradually become Krishna conscious. Every time you drink water, Krishna is the taste. Every time you see the light of the sun, the moon thing, that's Krishna. But because you have an intellectual ability, you should also read Krishna's words. You're talking about the essence of everything.
I think the ability in man. I think that's the root of meaning in a way. Like that essence, the ability to perceive that is Krishna.
Well, what is this Krishna though?
One of Krishna's own capabilities would be for him to invest in us the capacity to be able to experience him.
But what is this? Who is Krishna? What is this Krishna?
Since my conception, a bunch of learning, a bunch of things from my parents through my schooling. A
bunch of conditioning?
Yeah, conditioning.
Is that all there is to you?
Oh, no, like if you strip away all of that, I think it's...
If we take away all the material layers, what do we get to?
That essence of my ability to be able to
this essence stuff.
What do you mean by that?
Describe the essence.
You get to Krishna. You get to I guess you come closer to Krishna.
I think you should see the need to get some real knowledge, yes?
Mm.
Otherwise, just to talk about the essence and the that.
But, I mean, yeah, I mean, I agree with you about, like, you know, real knowledge, but...
But what?
Like, for me to experience inside myself...
You can take a certain knife and open up your chest and...
Well, I mean, you can try it. You want to see what's inside me, but if I want to see what's inside me, I've only got to experience it, and I know.
What, reach your finger down your throat, or what?
No, it's a feel.
You know what? Your stomach rumbling, or?
No, I can get the exhilaration of being in touch in some minute detail with Krishna.
What is Krishna? Who is Krishna?
I think he was there when I...
I think?
I think he's there when I don't think. when...
What is the best way to find out about Krishna?
Read the Bhagavad Gita?
Yes. Well, why are we opposed to that?
Me? Well, why am I opposed to that? Well, you're not opposed to that.
Well, why are we sluggish about that?
I don't know.
What is the goal of this life?
To attain Godhead, to reach Godhead.
So what is Godhead?
Krishna is home with us.
Huh? That your goal?
Yeah, I'd say it is, ultimately.
Then you must find out knowledge about the goal. You must find out knowledge about Krishna. Yes?
Mm.
Otherwise, what are we doing in life?
Fluffing about.
Fluffing about. That's the best thing you said, yeah? Fluffing about. And why do we fluff about, as you say?
In search of Maya. Sort of some aspect of Maya which we seem to see as fulfilling in some way, some material sort of images.
Grant, do you have anything to say on this subject matter? Can you give us some enlightenment about the course of material existence?
No, I don't think I can enlighten anybody really. Struggles my perceptions to wade through first before I give them clarity. I would say one aspect of Krishna would be the qualities that are inherent, which would be unlimited.
The only reason why we have qualities is because Krishna has qualities. The drop of seawater has salt because the ocean is salty. But the quantity of salt that's in a drop cannot compare to the quantity of salt in the whole ocean. Therefore, Krishna is independent, and we are also independent. But our independence is so tiny, and Krishna's independence is unlimited. What does it mean to have tiny independence? It means you're like a little baby. You're in a playpen. Is that what you call them here, playpens? You can choose what toy to play with.
But you didn't put the toys there. You didn't design the whole system of the playpen. But you think, now I will pick up the rattle instead of picking up the toy truck. Just see. Just see my great abilities. So our independence is so tiny. We cannot provide the facilities for our own desires. Basically, the only thing we can do is desire. And Krishna fulfills the desire. So Krishna consciousness means how to develop the best desire. And then Krishna fulfills that. Try to catch what's going on. In our mind, we think we are independent, but actually our whole life is bound up. You ever notice that? In our mind, we think we're independent. You ever notice that, Grant?
Yes.
We think we have so many choices and so many varieties that we choose. But actually, all the time, our body is in the shackles of birth, death, disease, and old age. But our mind is running here and there. Oh, I'm so free and I've got so many choices to make. Meanwhile, the very body that we identify with and we're so attached to is rotting, out of our control. Just like cancer cells right now. So many of you, you're thinking, oh, I have a long life ahead. There'll be great opportunity for material pleasure. While your mind is soaring ahead like that, what's going on with the body? It's completely degenerating. Can you catch that, little Clayton? In your mind, you're just all over the place, thinking everything will be fresh, everything will be good, there'll be opportunity for you. Meanwhile, the very body itself is rotting. But Krishna, his body has nothing to do with the laws of material nature. But a lot of people, they speculate and they think that because I have problems with this body of mine, that means the Supreme Absolute Truth, Godhead, must have no body. This body means problem. Body means limitation. You understand that, Joe? Who says that body must mean problem and limitation? Material body, that is so. But Krishna has no material body. There's no difference between Krishna's within and without. But there's a difference between your within and without. Within, there's the spirit soul. Without, there is the material body. But for Krishna, there's no soul within the body. Krishna, his form is completely spiritual. There's no difference between Krishna within and without. Some people think to have qualities means some kind of deficiency. They think the Absolute Truth can have no qualities. Because anytime there are qualities, that means limitation. Because we're all accustomed to living in this world and seeing how qualities are polluted. So we tend to think that all qualities must be that way. But Krishna's qualities have nothing to do with the illusory energy. So the greatest fascination in life is to try and understand Krishna by hearing from Krishna. But everybody likes to speculate. To sit back and, yes, I think it's like this, I think it's like that. The essence, the that. And in the meanwhile, what are we doing with our life? they claim. What do we do with our life while we're speculating?
We're dying, we're deteriorating.
Yeah, but while we're dying and deteriorating, we're trying to enjoy our senses. Sometimes we speculate and sometimes we try to enjoy our senses. I think that's very holistic and wholesome. To understand Krishna will put a stop to this kind of foolish activity. As soon as you become interested in trying to understand Krishna, you'll stop these crazy activities. But if you want to absorb yourself in these crazy activities, then you'll not try to understand Krishna. You can take a cup, and as long as it's filled with something else, you can't put anything else in. But if the cup is empty, something can go in. So because we are feeling full in material activities, we do not try to understand Krishna. Do you understand that point? That's the problem with a material appetite. An appetite for material expansion, so-called progress and happiness. We feel full in that material hankering and indulgence. And then we have no need to try and understand Krishna. So that is the great advantage of following the four regular principles. That automatically you become hungry for the real thing because your life is not smudged up with the false thing. It's like this afternoon, I didn't eat anything because I wanted to eat when I came here. But let's say if I just stopped off somewhere and got some junk food or some candy or something, then my appetite would be satisfied and I would be artificially nourished, and so I wouldn't eat here. But because I didn't eat, anything else when I came here, my appetite was raging for the real thing. So Krishna consciousness means to keep yourself hungry for Krishna and not falsely try to satisfy yourself with the material energy. That's why it's very destructive to have material ambition. Material ambition means to have some hope that I shall enjoy in this world, I shall get some control in this world. Very destructive. It's like a hallucination that takes over your brain. You see a mirage. There'll be an opportunity for me. I just see it. I see it now. You know about this, Grandpa. It's just around the bend. I see it. It's all coming together very soon. I see all the pieces coming together now. I'm going to have it together. I'm going to go places, do things. It's like a ghost that possesses you, a ghost of material ambition. You ever walk through the University of Auckland sometimes? You see all the students there, so many from abroad and so many Kiwis, and most of them, not all, but most of them, you see, they're feeling upbeat and ambitious, you know? Of course, we all know half the reason why you go to university is just to meet people and have parties and things like that. But also they're thinking, while we're having fun and going to parties and meeting men and women, we'll also graduate and we'll get a good job or some kind of job. So that the students are thinking, for now, we're enjoying our senses, and then we get a diploma that allows us to work and enjoy our senses in the future. So their heads are full. Our heads are full of these kind of bubbly dreams. And therefore, we cannot understand Krishna. We've been artificially satiated, artificially satisfied. Now, if you're really expert, you can see how society does this to everybody. It artificially satisfies you. Just like what would happen if before you came to the law tonight, you went and got a whole lot of candy and ate it. You wouldn't be very hungry when dinner time came around, right? But that candy actually can't nourish you. It can't maintain you. So society fills us up with junk food in all aspects. And then we don't have any appetite for the real thing. Then we have no impetus to understand Krishna. Now, everybody here would like to understand themselves, right? Like, Fraser, you'd like to understand yourself? And you'd like others to understand you, right? Suppose, you know, when you went to your work, and then, you know, some lady said to you, "Oh, Fraser, we're trying to understand you." What would you think?
You're crazy.
No. You wouldn't think that. What would you think?
Things are bad.
You know, very good. Very good taste you have. Yeah, you think that.
Yeah, that could fit
there. Yeah, they're trying to understand me. There should be more people like that in this world. But we're trying to understand ourselves, and we want others to understand us, but we're just tiny little insignificant things. What real benefit comes even if we can understand ourselves? It's like understanding a grain of sand on an infinite beach. But Krishna includes everything and everyone. And also Krishna has his own individuality. You see, a lot of people think that because Krishna is everything, and if you just like you take a piece of paper and cut it into pieces, then it loses its identity. So similarly, people think that when Krishna emanates all his energies, that he becomes depleted, he has no individuality. But that is not so. Krishna is so perfect and complete that everything can emanate from Krishna, and still he's perfect and complete. Krishna can even expand himself into other Krishnas and still remain as the original Krishna. Now, isn't this much more comprehensive than simply saying the essence and the that? Now, why should we? What else do we want to understand besides Krishna? What else do you want to understand besides Krishna?
I'd like to explore a few more universes in this lifetime.
But there are infinite universes. You won't even be able to explore this whole tiny planet in this lifetime. You won't even get to explore all of Australia and New Zealand in this lifetime. And you're talking about wanting to explore the universes? What is my point? You don't have that potency. Now, if you are going to explore, why not explore Krishna?
Does Krishna allow that?
Yes.
Very good question. Your first good question. Krishna allows you to explore him through devotional service. He says in Bhagavad Gita, only by bhakti yoga can I be understood. Why do we want to play around with little trinkets known as material universes? Why can't we understand Krishna? It's like someone who wants to understand you and they start just trying to understand the button on your sweater. Foolish. If they want to understand you, why don't they hear from you? Why don't they observe you? So this is the problem we get when we hear from improper so-called spiritual authorities. Our mind becomes very foggy. But we need this crystal clear. There's no nebulous words. Why don't we want to hear from Krishna? Yes, we don't want to submit. Therefore, we like to find so-called spiritual teachers who say, no, you don't have to submit. You are the everything. Very soon you'll realize that. You are that, and that is you, and it's all the essence. Oh, that's very good. High spiritual knowledge. This is the ananda, the bliss I'm looking for. And we become so bewildered and befuddled, we can't even sit down and read Bhagavad Gita. So this material world, it has its dangers. On the one hand, we have the dangers of mental speculation. We've been just talking about that. On the other hand, we have the dangers of karmic activity, the fever of wanting to achieve and possess. It is a fever. But people think that that's a very good thing, a very good fever to have. Srila Prabhupada tells the story of a doctor who went on a house call to a rich mansion owned by a rich lady. And the doctor was called because both the lady and her servant were sick, they felt. So the doctor took the temperature of the lady and the rich lady, and it was, what is the regular temperature?
The regular was 98.6.
So, Fahrenheit. It was 99 degrees. And the doctor took the temperature of the servant, and her temperature was 104. So the doctor naturally began to give his attention to the servant, who had a temperature of 104. And then the lady became very upset. Oh, this is not right. Her temperature is 104. Mine should be 106. You're thinking that the higher the temperature, the better. Of course, we know the higher the temperature, as it gets closer to what?
107.
Then you're dead. But she's thinking, oh, what is this? The doctor's giving all the attention to the maidservant because she has a temperature of 104. This is not right. My temperature should be higher. I should get the attention. So the point is, we think that the more we have a fever for economic development, the better our life will be. But actually, it's the reverse. The less fever for economic development that we have, the better. Thank you.
Now, that doesn't mean that we should not support ourselves. But that's not the important thing. That's an easily done external thing, to support yourself. Especially if you know how to live simply. But why are we not able to live simply? Who knows? Grant, why are we not able to live simply?
Exist desire.
Yes. Just like you guys. Now you're thinking, now you have a little job and living simply. But what's going on in the body? Material body means sex desire. Boy meets girl. And for a while they say, we'll live simply and just enjoy each other's company. But that only lasts for a few years. Then you have to make a grand arrangement. Especially the men, they think like that. Oh, my girlfriend, she's all right. She doesn't want much. They think like that in the beginning. But then sooner or later the bill comes in the post. You must expand the household opulences. That's the way it works. And then the man feels very proud. I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that, I'm going to work hard for her. Because I'm a man. And the women say, yeah, that's right, you're a man. I get to work. So like a beast of burden, you. You slave very hard. Hoping that when you get home, there'll be nice sense gratification. Another example Srila Prabhupada gives is of the ass who works for a laundryman. In India, you can see that. The ass is carrying huge loads of laundry, so much so that they stagger. Why do they do it? Yes. That's their reward, right? But anybody with common sense knows the grass is available everywhere. Why does the ass have to carry laundry just to, at the end of the day, be able to eat some grass? But what's the ass doesn't think that way. The ass just knows, I carry this burden of laundry. I get beat by the stick of my master, but at the end of the day, there's going to be some nice grass. At the end of the day, the laundry man, you know, takes the ass to where there's a little patch of grass, ties him to a stake there, and the ass eats the grass, and, oh, this is my reward. When we don't want to understand Krishna, we become possessed by all these fevers. We've got to understand we're not neutral. We're not in some kind of neutral stage. Desire is always active. If we don't desire Krishna, then we must desire illusion. But you can't be neutral. It's like on a gearbox. There's neutral. But there's no neutral in existence. So you must watch yourself and see how you're committed, how you're investing your energies. Everyone's committed to something. The quicker you realize that, the better. You can save yourself so much time. Just like it's not that you guys are just, sitting on the fence, Well, should I be spiritual? Should I be material? You're engaged. You're doing things. You understand it? Do you know the whole system of action and reaction? Do you know the whole system, how it works? But you're acting, aren't you? So how is that intelligent? You're acting, but you don't know the whole system. Isn't that very risky? Have no choice. Please explain. But why do you say you have no choice? Just like, due to previous reactions, you may be blind. And that certainly will affect everything you do in the future. But it doesn't mean that you have no choice. You can choose how you're going to act with that blindness.
You have no choice.
Yes. What is your response? How do you respond to that situation then? We're acting, yet we don't understand the whole system.
Well, you must only take into account, when you can only take into account, the actions that you've seen around you and try to infer rules from it. And experience, I would suppose. Basically, from your experience, what works to improve the situation.
And what would you call an improvement?
More freedom? More power?
More freedom? Could you please describe that?
Gives you a larger field of activities to more freedom would be less bound.
Less bound by what?
It's bound by your desires that are unfulfilled.
So what you're saying is if you fulfill your desires, or if you have the means to fulfill your desires, then you'll be less bound by unfulfilled desires? Is that
right?
Very good statement of illusion there. Very brilliantly said. I have to remember that. If you act to fulfill your desires, you'll be less bound by unfulfilled desires.
Well, I would say that would be a reasonable statement.
What do you say about that, Clay? Big Clay.
I think if you're always trying to fulfill your desires, you're never satisfied, so you just keep...
Yeah, so that unfulfilled. I wouldn't be there anymore.
What do you say about that, Fraser? If you fulfill your desires, I won't be there anymore?
Well, personally speaking,
yeah.
I'd have to agree that I keep getting more and more, so... I don't think you can fulfill them. That's my opinion. But, yeah.
What happens if you have a fire and you keep dropping spoonfuls of petrol on it?
I don't see the analogy of this in that my respect. I know where you're coming from. I completely understand where you're coming from, but
yeah. No, you explain. If you keep feeding the flame of desire, the flame gets bigger. Have you ever noticed anybody who's satisfied with their material desires? No, they always want more.
Maybe it was alternative. Well, I'd say that I have not met very many people who have very simplistic desires, and so therefore I cannot say that there are not desires that are buried very deep, that are creating an aspect of them seeing limitations in life, so that they will keep on carrying on. Chasing desires. I don't know how I would explain it properly.
Did you know? Okay, let's be practical. This is body. When you look in the mirror and you see your body, what are you looking at?
Energy.
But that energy, okay, what is it based on? Desire. Your whole body there that you're possessing is based on desire. It's been formed by desire. And your next body will also be formed on your current desires.
I understand that. So if you had no desires, you'd have no body.
If you had no material desires, you won't get a material body.
So if all your desires were fulfilled, then you would be free.
Desires are never fulfilled on the material plane. Impossible. That's like trying to say, you'll drop a lit match into a petrol tank, and as soon as you try to fulfill desires, you become more agitated.
If you let go of a desire, is that not fulfilling?
If you let go of a desire, what are you going to do?
Well, you're heading towards a state of freedom if you let go of desire.
Have you tried to let go of desire?
Not particularly, no. I have on a few occasions tried to let go of desire. Now I have, recently I had this in certain aspects.
No one can stop acting even for a moment. You always must do something. So the question is, how to be active in the right way? You cannot stop action, you cannot stop desire. Therefore, real spiritual life means to replace the inferior desire with the superior desire. Because you cannot stop desiring. Where is that verse? The embodied soul may try to restrict himself from sense enjoyment. Second chapter. Page 147. Vishaya vinivartante naraharasya dehina prasavajam rasopyasya padangyaspanavartate. You want to read the translation?
Okay. You have it? Page 147?
Sorry, I was just
thinking. I know.
Sorry.
59.
The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing the higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness.
Yes, let's meditate on that for a second. The embodied soul, we are in the body. It may be restricted from sense enjoyment. That's what the name of the game is, right? Sense enjoyment. Though the taste for sense objects remains, you may try to stop yourself, but the taste still remains. Any of you used to smoke cigarettes? So, when you stopped at first?
I haven't stopped.
Oh, you haven't stopped. The taste remains, right?
Yeah, and if you don't have one, your mind dwells on it.
Right! What's that, Grant?
Not in that exact position I have given up smoking cigarettes.
So you know, when you stopped at first, the taste was still there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, we may try to restrict ourselves from sense activity. We may try to restrict ourselves from pleasure. But the taste still lingers. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, you become fixed in consciousness. You replace the inferior pleasure with the superior pleasure. Otherwise, you cannot stop desiring. That's the problem with Buddhism. Lord Buddha taught a very specialized, narrow gospel. Very brilliant, but narrow. Just stop. So you have a lot of people running around today saying, just got to stop desire. You just got to let go. I remember my brother. I remember a few years ago. I was with my brother and his wife. And she's always in anxiety. Oh, what about this? What about that? Oh, this and all that. So I remember my brother once saying, Arlene, just let go. Just let go.
That was, you know, such a profound statement. You know, he thought that just that'd be like a charm. Just let go.
Oh, what about this? What about that?
Just let go. So similarly, Lord Buddha taught like that. Just let go. Stop desire. So once you stop, then what? So when people are very unintelligent, if you can at least get them to stop destroying themselves and others, that's a great accomplishment. But that stopping won't last for long unless they get something better to do. But Buddha was on a particular limited mission to stop people from using the Vedas as an excuse to slaughter animals. So a lot of people today think that spiritual life means just to stop desires, but you cannot. It's impossible. Krishna consciousness means how to desire the best thing. There's a purpose for desire. There's a purpose for hankering. But that's meant for Krishna. Therefore, if we don't understand Krishna, we never know what to do with desire and hankering. You understand that point, Clayton? So many people have this misunderstanding that spiritual life means no hankering, no desiring, because that's all bad. No, you come to Krishna consciousness, you find out that spiritual life is full of hankering and desire. The whole process of bhakti yoga means how to inflame the desires and the hankering for Krishna. You understand that, Joe? Yeah.
What's hankering?
Hankering, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Yearning for something. Have you ever yearned for something?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Cigarettes.
So formerly you were yearning for cigarettes, now you're yearning for Krishna.
Yeah.
Like all those guys at work at the car place. They're always talking about their yearnings and hankerings, right? Mm.
They want car stereos,
so and
they want the car to be bigger and better.
They want car stereos, and their cars to be bigger and better.
Yeah. And faster.
And faster. That'll make them happy, yeah?
Yeah.
So, Fraser, how do we get out of this trap of desire? We cannot stop desire. It's like when you go to work. You work at some kind of computer place or something? Or so, what are you seeing all around you? Desire. You can't stop it. The problem, however, is that it's misplaced, misdirected. People are desiring to enjoy matter. When you think about that, it's really crazy. Just think about that point. To enjoy matter. What do you think about that, Green?
I'm just thinking about my experiences.
Yes? In your sojourn and trying to enjoy matter?
Mm-hmm.
We are conscious entities. What are we doing trying to enjoy matter? But because we don't understand Krishna, therefore nothing makes sense. You can't understand desire or enjoyment or yearning without understanding Krishna. Because the real purpose of desire, hankering, and enjoyment, the real purpose of these things is in connection to Krishna. To desire Krishna. Or more specifically, to desire Krishna's pleasure. Have you ever desired pleasure for anyone, Joe?
Is that pleasure for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
You desired what, that your mother would be happy or something like that? So what is so far-fetched about desiring Krishna's pleasure?
Well,
nothing.
You have to find out about Krishna. Does anyone here know anything about Krishna? You must become very eager to understand Krishna. Just to exist in this world today takes so much effort to understand. But it's all misdirected because none of what you're trying to understand anyway can teach you what is desire, what's the best kind of desire. Now we'll read a little bit about Krishna in the fourth chapter. This fourth chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge. We'll read some translations and we'll read some purports. Now before you hear this chapter, what would you think Transcendental Knowledge is about? Grant, what would you think Transcendental Knowledge means? Knowledge of energy beyond the material. But you see, there's no question of talking about energy unless you know the source of the energy. Just like when you talk about sunshine, you're talking about the sun. So once again, you see, we have this aversion to Krishna. It's unconscious, but it's there. Transcendental knowledge, yeah, that means about the energy that's beyond the material. What about the source of that energy that's beyond the material? Would we do anything to avoid Krishna? Why is that? Raja, why is it that we do anything to avoid Krishna?
Because it takes away our individuality as of such. That's what I find I feared initially when I came. It
takes away your individuality. Now, that's a very good point. Very good answer. But how are you fearing that? Taking away your individuality. Like, and what?
Because I taught myself that I could rely on myself no matter what. You can follow what anyone says, but if they turn out to be wrong, then everything you believe in falls apart. Mm-hmm. So if you turn everything internal and believe on yourself, you accept what is, regardless of what happens.
But what is yourself?
That's the problem.
Right. And how can you understand the self without understanding what you are a part of? Are you everything? That means you're a part of something, right?
Yes.
You cannot understand yourself unless you know what you're a part of. That's why self-realization must be coexistent with Krishna consciousness. You cannot understand a beam of sunlight without understanding the sun. Similarly, you cannot understand yourself without understanding Krishna. Because Krishna is the whole and you are the part. So if you want to be self-realized, you must understand Krishna. Because you do not exist separately from Krishna. But what's going on in this world of illusion? We are constantly being motivated with false incentive. The false incentive that I can live a life that makes sense even though I don't understand Krishna. Even though I don't understand what I am part of, I can still live a life that is meaningful and makes sense. You understand? So you were fearing you're going to lose your individuality, but you actually didn't know who you were. So, in that sense, in other words, from the material point of view, as a member of materialistic society, you don't have any individuality anyway, because you don't know who you are. But we're still thinking, I'm going to lose it, even though I don't know who I am. I'm going to lose my individuality. This is the insanity. The problem is, and that we cannot see how we are slaves of the illusory energy. We're thinking, I'm an individual. I'm the captain of my ship, the master of my fate. We can't see how we're surrendered servants of the illusory energy. Our senses and mind demand, and we succumb. It's like I was watching my stomach today. I'm trying to skip a meal midday by taking spirulina pills.
Yeah.
Just take 6 spirulina pills and hopefully I can skip a meal. So, but because your stomach is accustomed to having something in it, it likes to demand, fill me, fill me! So I was yelling back at it, no, no! I'm not eating till 5:30. And the stomach is, fill me, I want something, I want to feel packed. I want something in me. I say, no! So the body senses make demands. But we can't see that. We can't see how we're slaves of illusory energy. We think, I'm in control. When actually, we spend day and night just serving our senses. And you see that, Grant? How we actually serve our mind and senses?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And do you think that by that service, the mind and senses are satisfied? No. They're never-ending taskmasters. So where's the individuality? We're always under the gun of the senses. They just call you. Razor, come here, boy. Yes, yes. We even serve mental speculation. The mind likes to speculate, and we give it opportunity. So where's the question of losing our individuality? We don't even know who we are. First find yourself, then you can lose yourself. How can you lose something you never had? We're just clones in material existence. We're just clones. Really, Clayton, what do you think? Other than being Krishna conscious, what are you really doing in your life? Or what were you really doing in your life that's different from what your parents or your grandparents or their grandparents did? What's the difference?
Nothing.
They ate, you eat. They slept, you sleep. They worked, you worked. What's the difference? They tried to enjoy their senses, you tried to enjoy your senses. Yeah, isn't it amazing how we all feel kind of unique? It's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, you know, and
that's something special. Like Grant, what are you actually doing that's different from what all your previous generations of Grant's family members have done?
No, not a lot
to do. Is there anything different?
I suppose I'm interested in self-realization.
Oh,
my parents probably dabbled in it in the past, but it's not a strong trait, I would say.
So, when we abandon this false conception of material uniqueness, it's quite humiliating. Like Fraser, you can think, you know. How old are you?
20.
I'm 20. I am Fraser. And I'm working at a computer place, and I have a little place where I live, and you know, at my mother's house, and I have a little car, right? And but this is the same as what's been going on generation after generation. But isn't it amazing how under the influence of Maya we think there's something special about me? Now there is something special about us, a there's nothing special in material life. If you want to find out your real uniqueness, you have to take up Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there'll be a mystery for you. Why you feel unique, even though you're doing the same thing as so many generations? Your uniqueness comes out in service to Krishna. But not in service to illusory energy. It's like, yo, all the things you say I've heard at least a million times in a million places. So, we'll start page 215. I'll read a few verses and then some purports. Sri Bhagavanuvacha Imam Vivasvate Yogam Krotavanam Avyayam Vivaswan Manave Kaha Manu Ishvatave Bravit. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivaswan, and Viraswan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind. And Manu, in turn, instructed it to Ikshvaku. You see, for Krishna conscious persons, there's no need of worrying whether there's life on Mars or life on here or life on there. Krishna tells you, I spoke this book to the chief of the sun planet. Text 2, page 218. Evam parampara praptam yamam rajasayo vidu sakalinaha mata yoga nashta paranjapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of the succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost.
How was it broken?
The meaning was lost.
But how could you fall out of something that's so fulfilling?
The nature of life in the material world is that people come here to forget Krishna. How could you leave the spiritual world if it was so fulfilling? You have independence to use and misuse. It's like now you are hearing Bhagavad Gita. You can go out the door and do who knows what. You have that independence.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it says that if you're in Krishna's presence or in the spiritual world, that you wouldn't have any desire to come to this material world.
Where is it, say that?
I don't know, I heard it here, once before.
You always have independence to use or misuse. It's not that Krishna says with a gun in his hand, come here and love me and be happy. There can be no question of love without independence. You have that much independence to choose to accept Krishna or reject. But once you make your choice, you're bound by the results of that choice. If you choose to accept Krishna, you become bound in the ecstasy of pure love of Krishna. If you choose to reject Krishna, you become bound by the laws of material nature. So you ask, how is it that the meaning of Bhagavad Gita became lost? That's the way things are in this world. Just like today, there's so many so-called spiritual groups, so many margas and so many paths and so many this's and that. How do you know that they are obscure? Because anyone who ventures in those kind of ways, they can't understand Bhagavad Gita. Their head becomes muddled. We can read a bit from the purport on page 218.
starting with 5,000 years ago. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord himself that the disciple succession was broken, and therefore he declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciple succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demonic because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by the parampara, this is the succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity. But if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. Understand that, Joe? Yeah. Text 3. Sa evayam maya tijya yoga prokta puratana bhakto sime sakha chiti rahasyam hi charutamam. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you because you are my devotee as well as my friend and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. Text 4. Now Arjuna is going to bring up a point. So say, in other words, Krishna, what's going on? Arjuna uvacha aparam bhavato janma param janma vivaspataha katam etad vijaniyam samadhyav protavaniti. Arjuna said, the sun god Vivaswan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you instructed this science to him? Who knows what this question means?
He was kind of confused by reincarnation or something. And he
no. Little Clayton, do you know?
The sun god was born before him. So how could it be instructed sun god?
Right. In other words, Krishna, his appearance in this world was for 125 years. But the sun god is millions upon millions upon millions of years old. So, Arjuna is saying, well, how could... It doesn't make sense. Krishna, you've only been around for 125 years. How can you talk the sun god in the beginning of his life when the sun god is millions of years old? So what's Krishna's answer? The next text. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Bhuni Vedati Tani Janmani Tavacharjuna Tanyaham Veda Sarvani Natvam Veda Padantapa. The personality of God had said, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that he's appeared many times in this world. Actually, for Krishna, there's no question of birth, just an appearance. So also in this way, Krishna is explaining the difference between him and an ordinary living entity. We forget everything of our previous life when we're born, but Krishna remembers everything. Next text. Now we're getting to the point where Krishna is going to describe himself. Very important, Joe. We're going to hear Krishna describe his characteristics. You may say, well, since Krishna says many, many births he's passed, that means Krishna must have a material body. No, we'll hear about that now. Text 6.
Ajopisan Naviyatma Bhutanam Nishvaropisan Prakatim Swamadishtaya Sambhavami Atmamayaya. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So Krishna is saying that I am spiritual. I have a transcendental body. It has nothing to do with matter. Yet I can still appear in this material world. When Krishna comes, that is pure spirit appearing in the world of matter. World of matter and spirit. Pure spirits appearing. Krishna is not wearing his form. He is his form. You understand? Now Krishna will describe in the next verse his modus operandi. Yada yada yadharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam yadharmasya Tadatmanam Sridamyam. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice of the descendant of Bharata, and the predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself.
I was asked a question here in concern with this text. Sean Adora asked, why did he not come when Hitler was around, say, in Germany, with all the mass slaughtering of the Jews?
What may seem a disaster to the ants is no big deal to humans. Mm-hmm. Krishna knows exactly when things are so bad that only his presence can rectify. A little kid thinks it's a disaster when someone takes his rattle. It's like your kids. If you take something from them that they want to play with, they consider it a great disaster, don't they? So that's like them saying, Mom, why hasn't Krishna appeared? You've taken my rattle. It's a great But Krishna has appeared. In his name. He appears in Kali Yuga as his name. He's appeared in the form of the Krishna consciousness effort. So Krishna has appeared. But why not? Why didn't Krishna stop Hitler? Huh?
When I look at it now, it wasn't really that bad.
But you have to understand that Hitler is the reactions to other people's material actions. People want to live a godless life, so persons like Hitler appear as a result of godlessness. People are dying all the time. Not just by Hitler. The death rate's 100%. There was this guy in Cambodia who, now they thought he just killed about 500,000 people. Now they say he's killed about 2 million people out of a population of 7 million. This world is full. This world is full of birth and death. People are always dying and killing one another. But the real tragedy is when there is no understanding of Dharma. You have to understand what the real disaster is. People are always killing one another. Well, how can they avoid that? How can they not do it? They don't have any understanding. So the real disaster, the real Holocaust, is they have no knowledge.
Mm-hmm. That leads me to a question about karma. If Hitler was a result of everyone else's, he was put on earth to give them the reaction that they deserved, that's sort of like karma. If a bad, something bad happens to me, that's because I'm getting the reaction that I deserve from putting out that in a former life or in the past. And so if the person that inflicted that on me, they're creating a bad reaction for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
How does it work out that it's fair that they, because they were instructed or sort of to give that reaction back to me, that they're creating a bad reaction for themselves? Yeah,
if someone comes and cuts off your arm, they are the agents of your reaction to your past actions.
Does that mean that that Krishna would have, in a subtle way, told them to do, or because they're doing that, they're getting a bad, would they still get the bad reaction themselves?
Yes, of course. It all works out perfectly. They want to misuse their independence by cutting off your arm. You deserve to have your arm cut off. So they cut off your arm, and then they'll have to have something happen to them. So that's this whole material existence is simply directed by Krishna. He directs the souls in their bodies. The bodies are machines made of the material energy, and Krishna is in the heart directing. The whole thing works out just fine. Everybody gets what they deserve. Any other questions or points, Grant? So, what have you learned today about Krishna's body?
Pure spirit.
Yes, there's no difference between Krishna's body and his self. So in this chapter, you're getting an understanding of Krishna's body. In Sanskrit, that's known as Sarupa Lakshana, the essential quality.
So.
Krishna says he's unborn, his transcendental body never deteriorates, he's the Lord of all living entities, and he has an original transcendental form that appears in every millennium. Then, in this verse we've just done, Krishna tells you about his activities. What does he do? Whenever there is a problem, he comes. Read more about that in the next verse. That's 8. Pritranaya sadhunam vanashaya chajuskritam dharma sanstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So Krishna is telling you his mission. Then finally, text 9. Your reward, your outcome for trying to understand Krishna. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha takta deham para janma naiti mameti sarjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna.
Why is the sun god so old? Why doesn't he obtain Krishna's abode and gone back?
You, when you're the, living on the sun, apparently you live for a long time. 1 year equals 24 hours of Earth time. No, 24 hours of time on the sun planet equals 1 year of Earth time.
But why is his desire still not to go back to Krishna?
Who said it?
Well, it's been 5,000 years since this was written, and if we look on a scale like that, he's definitely been there a lot longer than our life. And
right.
If his, basically, he'd be a lot more released from what we are to material desires to be that high up.
So?
So he should be able to obtain that a lot quicker than we could. And proportionally in our lifetimes.
We'd be a lot quicker. Krishna says he spoke Bhagavad Gita, the sun god. That means the sun god is a devotee of Krishna.
Then why is he still the sun god?
That's his post he's doing on behalf of Krishna in this life. His life is nowhere near ending. That's the advantage of the human form. In just the blink of an eye, you can go back to Godhead. You don't have to stay around for the lifetime of a demigod.
Okay, so if everything's like, everything's there for Krishna, you still can't go back till you die.
You, even before giving up the present body, if you become so absorbed in Krishna's service, then you're where you should be. It's not dependent on relinquishing the body. It's dependent on absorption in devotional service. If you engage your body, mind, and words fully in Krishna's service, then you are liberated even in this lifetime. You don't wait till you give up your body. Therefore, our whole emphasis is on engaging everything in Krishna's service. Any final questions?
This isn't got anything to do with the topic, but who wrote the Bhagavad Gita? Did Arjuna like write that actually, yeah, or who passed it on?
The Vedic literatures come from an oral tradition. They were written down 5,000 years ago by Vyasadeva, but previous to that people could remember something just by hearing it once. But the age of Kali, the present age of Karl, means that all those kind of facilities and faculties are very much diminished. Now generally when you hear that something's handed down by ear, you say, oh, it's faulty. You've got to write it down. You write it down, then it's accurate. But simply by hearing, no, it's faulty. Sounds like some primitive tribes, you know, they pass knowledge down by word of mouth. But we think like that because we don't understand the great potencies of previous ages. In fact, our main problem is we think that the way human beings are now is the most advanced it's ever been. Now, what the Bhagavad Gita is totally the opposite. The way human beings are now, this is the worst age. So we're thinking we're the greatest, you know. This is the height of civilization. And the Vedas are telling us, no, this is the worst time. Everything is at an all-time low now. Our brains are weak, our bodies are feeble, our intelligence is practically non-existent, but we think, oh, this is the best, the highest level. We evolved from bacteria and microbes up through monkeys, and now this is we are the crown of creation. But if we actually understand what the Vedas are teaching us, we know this is the worst age. This is the age when all the worst criminals take birth. Any other questions?
I haven't seen any Krishnas with beards.
Why are you concerned with that?
I was wondering why.
Is that important to you?
No. I heard I was talking to one Krishna, and he said that fundamentalists keep harassing him for years and he had to shave it off. That's where he had to.